Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
I'm tied to you. I'm tied to you.
I won't deny that I believe this.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The multiple Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, and producer Rodney Crowell was one of the founders of the style that's come to be known as alternative country. His career has been marked by notable collaborations, like the one with Emmylou Harris that brought Rodney to our ground floor performance venue, The Green Space, back in 2013. Now, Rodney is back with a new album called Close Ties, and it features collaborators like Sheryl Crow on this song, and Roseanne Cash and John Paul White. The new album draws on folk, blues, rock and roll, and, yes, alt country, but mostly it draws on Crowell's own deep well of stories and characters, whether fictional or not. He's going to start us off with a song called East Houston Blues. It's Rodney Crowell, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you, John. Well, I grew up hungry, and I grew up hard. Ran the streets and alleys from my own backyard. I got a break-in in it on my list of crimes. Been before the judge one too many times. East Houston Blues, scale of 1 to 10. About a 9.5, where it's always been. It's in the drinking water and in a bar ditch mud. East Houston Blues gets in a poor boy's blood. I learned to drink and drive when I was 12 years old. My uncle Fireball started, rest his ragged soul. He ran a 54-foot up and down the drag, sipping early time straight from a paper bag. East Houston Blues, picture Dallin Street and Navigation Boulevard where the crossroads meet. Three sheets in the wind, brick shy of a load. East Houston Blues, down a nowhere road. $40 boots, Big Ben Gora hat, stolen money from an inside job, so maybe think about that. I'm a third ward child, my mother's only son, which means exactly nothing without a loaded gun. I don't believe in love, and this I guarantee. If there's a God above, he's got it in for me. East Houston Blues, what you want me to say? I gotta find me a woman, keep the wolves at bay. Keep my head on straight, or maybe toe the line. East Houston Blues ain't no friend of mine. So you understand, that of which I speak, I'm a worried man on a losing streak.
That is Rodney Crowell with the East Houston Blues from his brand new album called Close Ties. actually comes out on March 31st. And solo performance, unplugged here in the studio. Rodney, one of the things, there are many things to love about this record. One of the things I love about it is there's like some explicit blues guitar playing, you know, yeah. Which has always been a part of the kind of the mix, I suppose. But to hear it like that, you know, in songs like this, it just sounds great.
Well, I came in with Hank Williams Sr., and I've always been reluctant to hang the Sr. on there, but time passes. And that Hank Williams honky-tonk swing and blues, yeah. the way that guitar playing kind of led me to rockabilly. So I had more of a rockabilly approach to the guitar playing, but in recent years, as I've matured, I've become far more interested in, you know, Blind Blake and the Mississippi Delta players. Yeah. And, well, I'm always a big fan of Lightnin' Hopkins, you know. I am a Third Ward child. I was born in the Third Ward of Houston, but the real deep part of the blues in Houston was Fifth Ward, which yeah. was a stone's throw away from Third Ward. And so Lightnin' Hopkins was my first blues hero. But I was more drawn to the rockabilly and hillbilly honky-tonk guitar style. But in recent times, I've paid attention and learned some from those classic guitar players.
Well, also in recent times, you've been doing a lot of looking back. You know, the memoir came out, about 2 or 3 years ago?
And Canterbury Sidewalks, yes.
Right. And now this album feels kind of like a memoir as well.
I could see that, yeah. It happened that some people very close to me, Guy Clark, Susanna Clark, and John D. Loudermilk, and my business manager of 38 years, and one of my favorite publishers, Bo Golson, dropped off the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gone. Where they were part of my environment and part of my ongoing conversation, they were there no more. And I found myself writing songs, speaking to those empty spaces, those right. close ties that once were, and in some ways continue.
So a song like Life Without Susanna, for example.
Yes.
That's for Susanna Clark.
Very much so, and it's very explicit to our relationship. When she passed away, she was agoraphobic, and she spent the last 10 years of her life shut away, and I spent those 10 years either sitting bedside and talking to her while she smoked her cigarettes, or down the hallway kind of saying, come on out here and let's talk, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tried. When she left, you know, I was angry. So I decided, well, I could compose a love song to this great woman that I knew, this muse and this artist and this poet, or I could tell the truth. And so Life Without Susanna, I'm just going to write the truth about she and I from my perspective. And I'm sure if she heard it, she would go, okay, yeah, you didn't fudge on that.
Yeah.
A poet in gingham, an assassin in jeans, the most near perfect woman I had ever seen. Hardly routine. Life without Susanna troubles me in ways hard to express. As she withdrew, I grew distant and judgmental. A self-sure bastard and a stubborn bitch locked in a deadly game of chess. The upside of my status, a cut above the rest.
So where you might expect an acoustic, heartfelt ballad, a slow love song, mm-hmm. instead you get this kind of gritty, plugged-in, you know,
angst-ridden,
yeah.
angry. Well, but it is a love song.
Sure.
It is. It is a love song. It's like if I hadn't loved her that much, I wouldn't have that much passion behind get out of that bed and live this life.
Yeah.
I need you.
Well, and then she and Guy Clark both come back at the end of the album in the song Nashville 1972.
True, yeah.
Along with apparently everybody else who was in Nashville at the time. So the question then becomes, how literally autobiographical are these songs? I mean, the one you just played for us, please tell me you did not really learn to drink and drive at the age of 12.
I did not.
Okay.
No, I did not. But my uncle and my uncle Fireball is a composite of my two favorite uncles who were ne'er-do-well drunkards and very creative and very funny. He lived for the humor and the practical joke, and you know, like to drive a 49 Ford into Galveston Bay just to see how big a splash it would make. So you can't make that part of it up. You know, I did craft my uncle Fireball from a race car driver named Fireball Roberts and another race car driver who named Munson Stoddard, local Houston. But my two uncles were race car drivers too, you know. So they were, you know, their dream would have been to make it on the NASCAR circuit, but they weren't even going to get off the dirt track.
Right, right. So how did you get out of that environment? Was it music? Is that what pulled you to Nashville and got you out of that?
Yeah, it was music. And I'd have to admit that it was as if I was being pulled by a pretty strong magnet to Nashville in my early 20s. But I really had no concept of how to construct a career. And, you know, honestly, to this day, what I know about career is you could write on the back of a napkin. You know, I'm still painting by numbers, basically. Yeah. But somehow I get taken care of, and occasionally somebody mails me a check. So I don't know how I got here.
Yeah. Somehow you have had quite a very productive career over the course of 50 years.
It's like, somehow I got here.
And it's been, along the way, as I alluded to before, a career full of interesting collaborations.
Yeah.
Whether it's writing songs for other people or working with Emmylou Harris or the years that you and Roseanne were married, you produced all those records that basically that launched her career. And she is one of the guests on this new record.
That's true.
Along with John Paul White, who people will know is half of the group The Civil Wars.
Yes.
So, you're pulling from collaborators from 20, 30 years ago in your past to, you know, John Paul is a younger guy.
Well, when I wrote it, It Ain't Over Yet, the bridge melody, when I wrote it, I was giving narrative voice to my friend Susanna because, you know, in the early 70s, the scene that I fell into, myself, Steve Earle, and Townes Van Zandt, and Guy Clark, and a group of transplanted Texas songwriters, we fell in, and Susanna was the muse in the middle of it, and she would often chide us, you know. Guy was 9 years older than me, and I had no business taking a competitive approach to songwriting because my skills were definitely behind everybody else's. But Susanna used to take great delight in, like, you know, saying, "You silly boys, you know, you're like so competitive and you think that's what art's about. You know, that's not what art's about. That's not what poetry is about. You boys, you're so silly." You know? And she would just take the mickey out of us constantly, which made us strive more deeply to come up with something where she would go, "Yeah, okay, now you're a real artist. Okay, you can go over there and sit down and and listen to somebody else instead of vying for the attention in the room."
Yeah.
She had that take on it. So when I gave the bridge section of the song that narrative, I knew Roseanne's voice was a perfect delivery system for it. And I sent the song to her, and she came right back and said, "Yeah, I want to be part of this." And I cannot claim to John Paul White doing the chorus sections because that would be Kim Bowie. She knew John Paul's voice better than I did. I knew John Paul's voice as part of the Civil Wars.
Right.
But I didn't know it singularly. And when he came in the studio to record with us, I was really gobsmacked, as they say, across the pond. It's like, oh, man, how beautiful and soulful is this young man? And we've since become pretty good pals. He's a very dear boy, you know, and there's a lot of substance there.
Mm.
And I got lucky on that one, thanks to Kim Bowie.
And who is Kim?
Kim Bowie is one of the producers.
Okay.
On the record.
So on the record, which is called Close Ties, we get to hear these fabulous guests, Roseanne Cash, John Paul White. But here in the studio today, it's just you and you're lonesome on the...
I'm lonesome on this. I can do mine and John Paul's part, which John Paul's was the chorus. I certainly can't reach the range that Roseanne is in. I may have to edit it out, but, you know, this, as my friend says, everything counts. So you may just have to get the record to hear that part of the song, but I can come up with a gist of what it is.
All right. Live and unplugged here in the Soundcheck studio, it's Rodney Crowell with a song called It Ain't Over Yet.
It's like I'm sitting at a bus stop, waiting for a train. Exactly how I got here is hard to explain. My heart's in the right place, what's left of it, I guess. But my heart ain't the problem, it's my mind that's a total mess. With these rickety old legs and these watery eyes, oh, it's hard to believe that I could pass for anybody's prize. And here's what I know about the gifts that God gave. You can't take them with you when you go to the grave. And it ain't over yet. Ask someone who ought to know. Not so very long ago, we were both hung out to dry. It ain't over yet. You can mark my word, I don't care what you think you've heard, we're still learning how to fly. It ain't over yet. So for fools like me, who were built for the chase, it takes a right kind of woman to help you put it all in place. And it only happened once in my life, but man, you should have seen her hair, two shades of foxtail red. Her eyes, some far-out sea blue-green. I got caught up making a name for myself. You know what that's about. One day your ship comes rolling in, the next day it rolls right back out. And you can't take for granted none of this shit. Oh, the higher up you fly, boys, the harder it is you're gonna get hit. It ain't over yet. I'll say this about that. You can get up off the mat. You can lay that till you die. It ain't over yet. Here's the truth, my friend. You can't pack it in. And we both know why. It ain't over yet. And a girl would come in. A silly boy is blind to get there first. You think second chances is some kind of curse. I've known you forever, and ever it's true. And if you came by it easy, it wouldn't be you. Oh, you make me laugh, you make me cry, you make me forget myself. Back when down on my luck, you kept me up for days. Oh, you were there with the right word to help me crawl out of the maze. And when I'd almost convinced myself I was hipper than thou, oh, you stepped up with a warning shot, fired sweet and low across the bow. And you don't walk on water, your sarcasm stings. But the way you through this old world sure makes a case for angel wings. I was headed for the bottom when you threw me that line, and I'll quote you now verbatim: get your head out of your own behind. It ain't over yet. What you wanna bet one more cigarette ain't gonna send you to the grave. It ain't over yet. I've seen your new girlfriend, thinks you're the living end. Great big old sparkle in her eye. It ain't over yet.
It Ain't Over Yet, a solo performance by Rodney Crowell of a song that, on the record, features vocals by Roseanne Cash and John Paul White. The album Close Ties comes out on March 31st, and on Thursday, March 30th, Rodney will be right across the street at City Winery performing some of this music.
That I will.
So, you know, that's an interesting song in context of what you were talking about before of, you know, how a bunch of people close to you have left us, mm-hmm. you know? And
yeah.
When you look back at that kind of breeding ground of Nashville in the early 70s, Townes Van Zandt, Guy Clark, Susanna Clark,
Mickey Newberry,
yourself and Steve Earle, and, you know,
John Hyatt, Lucinda Williams.
Some of those people are still here,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps against all odds in Steve Earle's case, and some of them are not. So this album not only has a kind of retrospective quality, but there's also a sense of bidding farewell. So to have that title, It Ain't Over Yet,
mm-hmm.
you sort of need that, I think.
Yeah. You know, I always say, you know, in a narrative, you can take somebody down a dark alley, but you better provide some redemption or, you know, or a friendly light at the end of that dark alley. And I think it's, you know, there's some old murder ballads and what have you, which is you go down that dark alley or down that dark hole and you don't come back
right.
for that purpose. But I think, you know, that there, because there are many of us still alive, and as I was writing It Ain't Over Yet, Guy Clark was on his way out, and, you know, there's, you know, It Ain't Over Yet, what you want to bet, one more cigarette ain't going to send you to the grave. Well, for the most part, it was the cigarettes that sent him to the grave. But, you know, it's like, at this point, come on, man, let's light up.
Yeah.
Because we all are who we are, you know.
So when you guys were kind of setting out to discover who you are, did you have it in mind that you wanted to do something different? I mean, did alternative country just kind of happen? Or you didn't, like, look at each other and say, let's start a movement?
No, if that's putting the cart before the horse,
sure.
you know, that won't happen. It's like, I don't think movements, if indeed I can claim any part of a movement, if you have an intellectual notion about it and you're going to set about to do it, I think the chances are that's not going to ring true enough to create a movement. People who love music can see through that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, that it was, the carrot was always writing the next song better than the last. Who was it? Samuel Beckett that said, fail better.
Mm.
It applies to songwriting, you know. Put the carrot out there and fail better, fail better, fail better. And, you know, I've had a nice long career failing better.
Yeah. And lots of other people have benefited from you failing better. I mean, you know, the people who've recorded your songs, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Bob Seger, the list goes on and on. Are you still writing songs for other people, or is pretty much it's just
you know, John, I never did, to be honest. I mean, honestly, if I wrote songs for other people, there again, that would be an intellectual process mm-hmm. of trying to make the song what it is before mm-hmm. it tells me what it wants to be. And my process for writing songs, and I believe this wholeheartedly. Now, but this makes me pretty singular in it. And at one time, this worked for me commercially. When I was a younger man, my sensibilities were more broad stroke, and so I wrote more commercially. But now my interest is in my singular sensibilities. And I believe if I'm patient enough, if I'm willing to invest 5 years or 2 years or 3 days or 6 months in a song, it will eventually tell me what it wants to be.
Mm.
Emmylou started recording my songs back in the mid-70s. First couple of songs, and people took notice of me. And so I spent a day one day writing Emmy a song to record. Finished it, got in a car and drove over to her house and played her this song, you know. And she said, oh, that's nice. She said, well, you know, I got this cassette with this song. I heard this song, you know, you're supposed to be feeling good. So I'm going to do this on my next album. And I got it right there. I was like, you know, I just wrote a really less than mediocre song because I was trying to craft something that wasn't coming from a real place inside me.
Yeah.
And I tried it one other time for hire for Kenny Rogers at the peak of his career.
Mm-hmm. Which also would have been the 70s.
This would have been late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
And failed miserably.
Yeah.
And people often say, you wrote songs for other people. No, I wrote songs for that particular song, and then when I got it right, it worked for other people.
Which is not the way we typically think of the Nashville songwriting machinery, you know, the songwriters in their little cubbies, right. You know, sort of churning out.
Yeah, well, that there are people that do that, and there's a tradition in the Brill Building. And,
of course.
I mean, there is a tradition of that. And songwriters who are gifted and clever and craft, you know, really fine commercial songs. It's not my sensibility, yeah. I come from an intuitive place with it, and I do exactly what I want to do now. And the good thing is that I have an audience, and another good thing about it is the audience is not a big audience, but it's a loyal audience who are willing to go with me, you know, down these pathways that I want to take.
Yeah. And as I mentioned before, you know, it's there are pathways that can lead to places like the blues and,
yes.
you know, all the other kind of American styles of music that they get lumped together under the umbrella term Americana, which is good. But it's a weave, right, of lots of different threads. And,
yes, it would be. Yeah. It's like one thing, you know, I'm on the board of the Americana Music Association. And I always say, well, you know, the first form of Americana music was jazz. You know, that and blues, you know, if you go back to New Orleans. And I guess you'd have to go back even farther to the Celtic traditions that came down to Appalachia.
Right.
But, you know, Americana music, it's a big tent.
Yeah.
And it is growing. I found out yesterday now that there are 80 Americana music radio stations across, I mean, specifically Americana. You know, that happened while I was sleeping. You know, it's like, wow, this is growing.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that it's only 80 because, you know, there are lots of other stations that use it as part of their mix.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But you're saying exclusive.
But that's the panel for the chart. And it seems as though I remember in my commercial peak as a country recording artist in the late 80s, early 90s, I think there were only like 120 radio stations that made up the board of the charts.
Yeah.
So Americana music is creeping up to that level. But of course, you know, population has tripled itself in that time.
Yeah. We're speaking with Rodney Crowell. He's here with us in the Soundcheck studio. The album is called Close Ties. It comes out on March 31st. The day before that, he'll be at City Winery here in New York. And he's got the guitar in hand. I really like this song, I Don't Care Anymore. You wanna play it for us?
Yeah, well, backstory on this, if you're interested, if your audience is interested. I made a record in 1988 that was, you know, I mentioned it as commercial peak. Mm-hmm. There were 5 number one records, songs off of it, and it was just luck, and the barometric pressure was right at the time, and I wrote and recorded the right songs. But not long ago, while I was writing songs for Close Ties, I happened to pull out the old vinyl, and there was this picture of me walking down a road with like silver toe tips and a wife beater t-shirt on with a bolo tie hanging around my neck and a mullet haircut. And it was like I looked at it and I I turned to my wife and I said, look at this guy. He's a poser. I was a poser. And in some ways, I still am. So, you know, the old thing is like, you know, don't make fun of somebody else. Make fun of yourself. So I'm poking at my late 80s self. I used to pull my britches on with just one thing in mind. Make the girls believe that I'm the last one of my kind. Silver toe tips on my boots and a mullet head of hair. Designed to walk into the room and make somebody stare, but I don't care anymore. If I don't stand out in a crowd, I was better off before. I tried to make my mother proud. I came to town a dreaming I could make my mark in spades. 40-odd years later, all my best cards have been played. Well, there's a hard knock situation when the accolades bestowed on your every last creation cries out middle of the road. But I don't care anymore about the fortune or the fame. I was better off before. I try to make myself a name. All that money that I blew through like some bootblack off the farm could not have vanished quicker if I'd have shot it in my arm. Some so-and-so says, don't you know, the limit is the sky. Well, the next thing I remember, I'm unlearning how to fly. But I don't care anymore. Dolls and favors that I saved from day one add up to next to nothing after all is said and done. A real friend tried to tell me, man, with all respect for you, the time to put away these things is long since overdue. If indeed I do get lonesome in my mansion on a hill, there's this neighbor's wife I covet for her beauty and her skill. The way she puts herself together, sleek and vagabond couture, makes each mailbox conversation one more heartache to endure. But I don't care anymore. Who does what and why? I was better off before, when I was just another guy. I've been lied on, spied on, cried on, tried on, taken for a ride, you bet. Fracked, cracked, smacked, jacked, what you see is what you get. I've been spit at, hit at, quit at, shit at, shouldn't hurt a bit at what I'm trying to get at. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice and put the blame on. I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore.
Rodney Crowell and I Don't Care Anymore. That's a song from the new album called Close Ties. Comes out on March 31st. On March 30th, you'll be across the street from our studios at City Winery playing some of this music live. And Rodney, it's been great having you with us again on Soundcheck. Congratulations on the new record. Sounds
great.
Thank you,
sir. Very kind.
This is Soundcheck.
I had a dog named Banjo and a girl named Muffin. I just blew in from Texas. I didn't know nothing, but I found my way around this town with a friend I'd made named Guy, who loved Susanna.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Follow us at Soundcheck on Twitter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Instagram at Soundcheck Radio. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Light production work provided by the New Sound staff, Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.
David Only and Steve Earle first came through, and every other guitar bum whose name I never knew. Old school Nashville, Harlan Howard, Bob MacDill, Tom T. Hall, go drink your fill and blow us all away.